Good morning. Good morning. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast to the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. My name's Aisha Barmania. This is, like I said, Peterborough Currents. We are also a podcast about Peterborough and the area. This is a show all about the Peterborough and Kawarthas area, telling stories, nonfiction stories, news stories, documentaries, all about what's going on, the people in the area, cool stuff people are doing. And this is the live Trent Radio version of it. On this show, I am going to play interviews that I've done with members of the community, some documentaries that I'm making, and the phone lines are also open to you to call in and share your stories or your opinions or whatever you want to talk about. So if you would like to call in and talk on Trent Radio through Peterborough Currents, you can phone in 705-741-4011. So today on Peterborough Currents, I'm continuing our monthly theme of LGBTQ pride in the Kawarthas, also what I'm calling queerness in the Kawarthas. This is going to be our last live show with this theme. So if you've heard some other ones and wanted to call in, this is going to be your last opportunity to call in. You can always still get in touch. We have an email address, peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter and Facebook. But if you do want to call in, this will be your last chance for that. And then, over the next week, I'm going to be making the podcast version of the show, which will have shorter versions of the interviews that are going to be played today and have been played over the past few weeks, documentaries on the topic of being queer in the Kawarthas, and that's available as a podcast, which you can download and listen to on your own time. But you're here now, so let's get into it. So again, if you want to call 705-741-4011, then we'll be able to talk about whatever you got to say. In this show, I have a couple interviews to play for you. So earlier this week, I was able to meet up with an amazing professor in the School of Education at Trent University. Her name is Carlene Pendleton Jimenez, and she's this educator. She teaches teachers in the teacher candidates in the School of Education at Trent, and she does a lot of research about LGBTQ education at all levels, but I think she primarily focuses on school age, so high school and elementary school, and how do we learn about gender and sexuality in these places. Oh, I forgot to do something, so let me just start that real quick. So I'm not going to play the whole interview with Carlene, but I have it edited up into a couple different segments. So we'll hear from her, firstly, about how she identifies and why that's important to her. And then I'll come out of that and give folks another opportunity to call in. And then later on in the show, I have another segment of our interview prepared that talks a bit more about teaching. So after that, I also have a documentary that I made about the neighborhood that I live in, the Avenues, where it's been this whole grassroots movement, I guess you could call it, to put a whole bunch of rainbow pride flags on people's houses. So not so much movement in that people are like actively trying to convince other people, but there's been this development of a trend where people are... it started a couple years ago with just one house offering to buy pride flags for everyone, and now it's rippled out into the whole community. So I spoke to all my neighbors, and then I prepared this little documentary about the pride flags and what it kind of means to folks. And also in the show, we're going to hear an interview that I did with Diane, the co-owner of You're Welcome, the new sex and sexuality shop downtown, called You're Welcome. I don't know if I just said that. Oh my goodness. Early in the morning. I haven't had a coffee yet. So maybe I'll just play the first part of my interview with Carlene so that I can go have a coffee and wake up a little bit. You can call in if you have anything to say. The number again, 705-741-4011. So let me just get this set up. And I'll just say again that Carlene, well, she introduces herself, so I'll just let it play.
My name's Carlene Pendleton Jimenez. I'm a writer and a professor at Trent University. I teach mostly in education, and I also sometimes teach in gender and women's studies. And I should say I'm also, you know, a mom and a lover and a I don't know.
Well, I wanted you to come in today so we could talk a bit about education about queer identities. I was just curious if you could talk a bit about how you identify yourself and how you came into those words.
Sure. I've thought a lot about this because, what, I'm 46 now, and I came out to myself when I was 18. And when I came out, it was the San Francisco area in the late 80s, early 90s. And I didn't know. When I was growing up, I did not know anything about gay people. I thought it was an insult. And so I'm sure there were gay people around, but nobody ever talked about that. So my first professor at Berkeley, I just kept watching her, and I thought, I'm like her. I don't know what she's doing. And I mean, in retrospect, I think it's like, you know, masculine woman was what I was reading. But I didn't know. I just knew I was like her, but I didn't know what that meant. And then maybe 6 months in, somebody told me, one of my classmates told me that she was a lesbian. And I honestly thought I needed to fight my friend because to me that was just an insult. I thought they were just saying that because she was smart. And that was the only concept I had of that. And then she said, no, she writes books about it. Like, I was like, what? And I always was tomboy, and people often thought I was a boy. And that was always an issue growing up. But I didn't know that had anything to do with the gay thing. Or, I mean, it doesn't necessarily, but, I mean, in my case, it did. But I didn't know that. So as soon as I found that out, I ran and I got a copy of her book. And then she wrote poetry about, like, women lovers. And I was like, wow. I just had no idea. I mean, I guess I just, at first I thought, oh, that's nice for her kind of thing. And then, you know, it took me maybe a couple months to really sink in to knowing that I was like that too. And just really thinking it was really, really bad for me. It would be a really bad life for me.
Really? Yeah. I was just going to ask, what was it like coming to terms with, like, identifying with that label that you had thought was an insult for the professor?
You know, in my journal I was writing, like, hating myself and worrying if I'd get a job and being freaked out. But I have to say, I felt very, very fortunate that I had this professor and around her, like, a few friends. And they were doing okay. They were doing okay. She had a job. She was, like, the coolest woman ever. Her name is Shri Moraga. She's a kind of a famous Mexican-American writer. But I didn't know any of that stuff at the time. But that gave me, you know, hope. Like, I thought, I mean, before I took her class, I thought I'd be a math major. And then when I saw her, I thought, I want to be like her. I want to do what she's doing. And so that helped. It really helped to have other people. Because you can doubt yourself, but to have, like, professors that were out, whether you liked them or not, you know, I mean, it made it more possible, for sure. And I'm always out when I teach as well, because made such a big influence on me. In terms of terminology, at that time, Mexican-American community, I'd say late 80s, early 90s, I just felt like, and I still use this term, I really like the term butch, and I thought, that's right, you know, that's how I feel. I feel like a masculine woman. I feel like a man and a woman. When I heard the terms trans, you know, later, maybe 10 years later, I thought, okay, I'm trans. Yeah, that makes sense. But I've thought about this too, and I thought, you know, I wonder if it has something to do at what age, you know, you get different terms. Because I felt like at that point in my life, that language still had the most meaning to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the kind of person that I am, I feel like there's been variations of terms over the last 25 years, and that's fine, and that's great, and people embrace it at different times, but maybe because I was 18 and that, you know, 19, 20, and those were the words that were given to me, I still love, like, being a butch. I think that's great, and if people say, are you trans? Yeah, I am, but, like, you know, that's the word in my heart, you know, that's close to me.
What do you think it is about that word that, you know, resonates so strongly with you?
I think partly that, you know, growing up, I was made to feel like being a masculine woman was something gross, and, you know, to be embarrassed about, to be teased about. I mean, certainly I got a lot of benefits from it as well, like being a tomboy. It's almost like you could be a tomboy and get some claim, you know, acclaim, but butch is just ugly and horrible. Or something. You know, it's like if you call yourself a butch, then people say, "Oh no, but you're attractive. You know, you're not that ugly." You know, kind of thing. I kind of like those words. You know, like the civil rights words that come out of, "No, I'm reclaiming this." You know, and like there's nothing wrong with being a man and a woman and being masculine woman. You know, there's not enough, I feel to this day, there's not enough representation out there that makes you feel okay about that. I think I was also very deeply influenced by Leslie Feinberg's writings, like Stone Butch Blues. I got maybe when I was 21 and my girlfriend's family had decided to attack us, and so I just kind of slept with Stonebridge Blues under my pillow. And I was really also moved by Leslie Feinberg's second book, Transgender Warriors, because it, you know, basically put out there the fact that there's always been people that are third, fourth, fifth genders that are, you know, that's in every culture and throughout history, that's just a thing. And I like the idea of being a third or fourth, or, you know, being not this two-gender system is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't represent what's out there. So anyway, yeah, I like butch because I feel like it's that outside gender too.
And there's, having read some of your writing, there's so many other aspects of identity that come into it as well. You know, you've, in butch, I'm going to mess up this word.
Phil Schalke?
Yeah. You also talk about, you know, being fat and, you know, having more weight and like your Mexican background as well. How do all these other aspects of your identity come together? And how do you understand your gender in terms of all of these other aspects?
Oh, okay. That's a hard one. you know, one thing I want to say about, you know, the ethnicity and race is, you know, when we were 20, you know, and we were in Shuri Moraga's theater group, we were queer youth, you know, I was a drama divas, we were called, we would say, oh, the word lesbian, that's a white word, that's a white woman's word, you know, that was like white middle class, and we were like coming from Mexican neighborhoods or mixed and more working class, and, you know, we thought we were so tough and fancy, and we were like, yeah, we thought we were really cool. And I remember one time, I'll never forget, like, we were talking trash, oh yeah, lesbian's a white word, blah 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 blah, and then Cherie just got really mad at us, and she said, you know, we all fought for that word. You can't give white women credit for that word. That came from all of us. Like, there was Audre Lorde was in the room, I was in the room, Anzal Dua was in the room, you know, like, you know, it was one of those moments where your elder is chastising you, but it made me think about being kind of young person and just we know everything kind of thing, and being told. So I think one thing when you ask that question, I think about, well, where did these words come from and who was there and, you know, what were the histories involved in those words? I definitely think at that time when I came out, there were a lot of people, and we did see it as more white and like middle class or upper class, but whether that was fair or not, that like it was really despised. The butch thing was despised there too. See, I got to be despised, you know. I love a word that you get to reclaim from everything. And at that time we would have like butch femme workshops and different things, and a lot of the people, I would say 10, 20 years older than us, they came to our workshops because they were fun, but they were pretty uncomfortable with it because that was emulating men and women and heterosexuality, and so that was bad, and you weren't supposed to do that. And there was a real kind of shame on that. As well. So part of the butch thing was like kind of, I probably came from lower middle class people. It was like, you weren't fancy. you weren't mainstream. You came from the outside, and butch was part of that, right? Butch was a term that a lot of Mexican American dykes would use, still do. So, and white working class women would use. So it was also outside of kind of the mainstream class and race as well.
Yeah. Do you think there's enough representation even now of butch lesbians?
No.
What do you think of the representation that's out there? Is it...
Like I said, I agree with you. I love Ivan Coyote's work.
Yeah.
I don't know if Katie Lang really talks too much about it, but every once in a while she's got a song where she'll put something in. You know who's good is, not that I've seen too much, but Leah Delarius.
Oh, yeah. Like,
she's very proud of being a butch. I would say Ellen on some level, but, you know, the Hollywood version. Yeah. I don't think she ever uses that language, but she's definitely not femme. You know?
No. Like, no.
Yeah, well, I think, so there's... But hardly any. I don't feel like there's enough people out there for young people to go, oh, it's okay to be this person that's kind of in between genders or has both genders and, you know, is always going to look queer, you know, always like never going to pass.
Yeah.
And to be proud of that. Like, I don't think there's enough out there. I think everybody's got to, you know, kind of go to the identity that they need, and I would just support everybody to get that. But I do think it's hard when there's not a lot of examples out there to show that it's okay, you know.
Totally. You also talked a bit about how you're out in all your classes, and a lot of your, like, film and, like, writing work is about telling your own story and making yourself visible. What do you think of putting yourself out there to be that kind of representation?
Like I said, I was deeply influenced by how profoundly that professor's influence on my life changed my life. So I kind of go, that worked, you know, and I think, like, you know, it's nicer if they like you, but they don't necessarily have to like you. But I also, coming from education, know that, you know, I haven't read this research lately, but they always say if they know somebody that's actually gay or queer, then it's like the number one teaching, you know, the biggest influence. You could give them all the facts in the world, but if they have a living, breathing person in front of them, you have a lot more impact. So, like, I feel like, why wouldn't I use that as a tool?
That was an edited portion of my interview with Professor Carlene Pendleton Jimenez from the School of Education at Trent University. You are listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. Today, our theme and our theme for the whole month has been being queer in the Kawarthas. And I'd like to hear from folks who might be listening. If you want to call in, the number is 705-741-4011. A lot of Carlene's work has to do with education and how do we come to learn about gender and sexuality. So I'd be curious to know what your story is. How did you come to identify the way that you identify? Even if you are just like, if you were born a woman and you're still a woman, or if you were born a man and are still a man, have you, what kind of conversations have you had with yourself? Like, what kind of self-reflection have you done, if at any at all? Or is it just something you take it for granted? Can phone in to share these stories, 705-741-4011. Or if you identify in terms of like straight or lesbian or gay or bisexual or anywhere along the, you know, continuum, how did you come to realize that for yourself? And what does it mean for you to use these words? Just out in the kitchen while we were listening to Carlene, Jeff, who answers the phones and helps me out with the show, he and I were talking a bit about when I came out to myself, because Carlene framed it in those terms, like coming out to yourself. When did I first start realizing that I, you know, wasn't straight and wasn't, and maybe didn't identify so much with the gender I was assigned? And I think the way it went was like I started having these feelings, like I started having crushes on my other friends who were girls back in like middle school and even elementary school. And it was something I felt a lot of anxiety about and, you know, stayed up at night kind of wishing like, oh man, please don't be gay. Please don't be gay. But I like boys. So like, it's fine. It's fine. Just don't worry about it. And I had a lot of like that kind of internalized homophobia that was contributing to me repressing those feelings. And it was only once I went to high school and I was in this really like friendly environment where I felt not only that I could identify as however I wanted and just be myself, but I could also be queer and that was okay, and be expressing my gender in many different ways. I went to a private all-girls school at the time, a feminist school called the Linden School. And when I was there, I had a lot of teachers who were queer, mostly queer women. And it was really interesting to have these role models. And a lot of my peers were queer as well. And it was this really positive space inside the school where we could identify however we wanted. So I started to come into this identity and started to, you know, recognize that I was bisexual and that was okay, probably around grade 10 or so. Not that I ever really, I don't know. It's one of those things where you don't need to exercise your sexuality to just be it, but I still have felt only more comfortable exploring relationships with men for the most part. But being bisexual is still a really important part of my identity to me. And I don't feel a need to have to prove it in any way by having any sort of relationship. But that's kind of how I guess I came into that side of my identity, you know, starting from a place of confronting homophobia and my own weird feelings about it, being in an environment where it was accepted and I could feel like myself, and then it becoming just this kind of understated part of me that I'm pretty confident in, but I don't, I guess I don't talk about it very much, but it's very much a part of me. Being bisexual is also interesting because you don't have to come out unless you're in like a relationship with another person of the same gender, or unless you like really feel like it. So I've only come out a handful of times to folks, and the reaction was kind of weird. Like people just didn't know how to react. And like, if I wasn't in a same-sex relationship, like, why did it matter to them? Why was I even telling them this? So it's this weird spot for bisexuals in the queer community where I think our coming out narratives are a lot different than the more traditional, like coming out as gay or lesbian or coming out as trans, it's a little bit more of a, in my experience, I don't know if you had a different experience, please call in. I'd love to hear about it. 705-741-4011. But in my experience, I just found like coming out, people were a bit nonplussed about like, okay, what do I do with this information? But that's my experience. And I haven't come out to everyone, even in my family. So if they're listening, consider this me coming out to you. But just to go back to what I was talking about, my high school, it was this really like queer friendly environment. And I hadn't thought of this as like a weird thing, but I think it was kind of weird because it was so queer friendly that no one really came out to each other. But in grade 12, we were on this class trip and we were all just like sitting in a circle, like chilling out after one of our days exploring New Orleans. And we were just sitting in a circle, like having tea or having a drink. And we just kind of, I don't know how it came up, but we all just decided to go in a circle and I guess come out to each other and say what we identified as. And it was this really interesting, like most people in the circle were queer and it almost felt like the straight or cis people felt like they were the minority and like they felt a little bit like, yeah, but I'm bi curious maybe. But it was this interesting, like in a super queer friendly environment where you can identify however you want, it hadn't come up really. And we were still in high school and it's like your identity is something that's always changing, but we just never articulated it in like fully to each other. So it was just nice to have this moment where we could talk quite frankly about like, yeah, I'm bisexual or yeah, I'm lesbian or, and there was no judgment or it wasn't even really like it, the conversation didn't have to go any further than just like, here's what I am. That's okay. And I think that really speaks to like what a queer friendly educational environment can be. And it was really meaningful for me to have that. And I think it really did a lot of good for my self-confidence and feeling free to identify the way I identify. And I think if I had gone to a more traditional high school where I didn't have that environment, I'd feel a lot more anxiety about gender and sexuality and just not have that kind of confidence to be who I am. And, you know, I think that's something a lot of folks struggle with. And it's something that Carlene deals with when she is doing research for her, doing gender research for in education. So I think I'll play the next little bit of our interview because it was really interesting. So if you didn't hear before, this is part of an interview that I did with Professor Carlene Pendleton Jimenez in the School of Education at Trent University. She is a butch lesbian and she does a lot of research and writing about education and LGBTQ education in particular. So for her latest book, Tomboys and Other Gender Heroes, she did some research in schools with youth to talk about gender and help them explore their own gender, as well as gather data for her writing. So it's just a short clip, and we're play that right now. Ooh.
I think it's your latest book, Tomboys and Other Gender Heroes. You kind of advocate for gender education in formal curricula. What do you think would be the value of that? And what do you think if you had had like a gender included in your school education, how do you think that would have impacted you?
Well, you never know what's going to happen between a curriculum document and the actual classroom. Yeah. But, you know, some of the one of my favorite curriculum expectations in the 2015 sex ed curriculum was like developing a positive gender self concept. I thought that's so great, you know. That's because I did research where I was asking them about gender and getting them to talk about gender, and that was with kids and adults. And I've worked with a lot of teacher candidates too, and I've had. You know, I remember this guy just saying, he's like, I'm 25 years old and nobody has ever asked me about this. No, there's never been a place to discuss this, you know. And he was just so, felt like it was so important and it was good for him, you know, to actually think consciously about this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, who knows what would have happened. But I know that my life the way it was, where everybody was just, you know, hushing around the fact that I was standing out as this really obvious queer because of my gender. And it was a little bit embarrassing for people, but you didn't say it out loud, or sometimes you did, but then you giggled or you hushed it up, and the adults were all a bit nervous. Like, growing up where people, like, the only feedback you're getting is that you're doing something wrong and it's very uncomfortable for people. I mean, that really sucks, right? So, to, like, if a teacher had taken up this curriculum, said, hey, like, we want you to figure out, you want to think about how you express your gender and figure out ways to feel good about that. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. Like, that's so cool. I mean, maybe I would have been horrified, but there's still something, even if I was resisting it and horrified and all of that, there's something about the institution that when, you know, the documents in the institution says this is important, even if you're being a kid and you're trying to back away from it, I think it's still meaningful, you know, that maybe you hold on to that, like, oh, okay, you know.
So that was Carlene Pendleton Jimenez from Trent University talking about gender education and how she believes that it's important to have that in school curricula. Part of the research that she does that kind of has led to this conclusion is this research that she's done in schools to where she asks these questions, like she was saying, where she asks questions that lead to, like, individuals developing gender self-concept. So I got her to walk us through one of these writing prompts. So if you want to follow along at home, you will need a pen and paper, or however you want. I'd also be interested in folks if they want to call in to share their what they're thinking based on this writing prompt. So the number is 705-741-4011. So I'll just let Carlene take it from here and talk about this writing prompt.
Anyway, so this is the writing exercise. You pick an object or an activity that you feel represents your gender in some way. So one of the objects I often chose, because I was wearing it, was a black leather watch that I had that was black leather and silver. But it was, so it's kind of like, had the leather and silver that looked kind of tough, but then it was kind of slender. So it was a real mix of masculinity and femininity. And I would show them that. This is a possibility, you know. But you can choose anything. People have chosen clothing or jewelry. They've chosen sports. They've chosen music, anything you want, whatever it is. And it's you, you know, deciding that that has something to do with your gender. So the line is, my blank is a part of me. So I say, you know, my leather watch is a part of me. My soccer ball is a part of me. My Melissa Etheridge is a part of me, you know. And then from that line, you describe it. And it's always good to be as specific as possible. It's good writing. And then you say how that object makes you feel. You know, like, you know, I love to wear a tie out to go dancing. When I put that tie on, I feel so handsome, and I feel so happy. I feel like I'm allowed to do whatever I want in the world. You know, I feel all those things. So you have to figure out what you feel. And then after that, comment on what you think you would do if anybody tried to take that away from you. So it could be as simple as, if somebody tried to take my silver tie, I'd try to punch them in the nose. It could be that, I don't know.
If someone said you should stop wearing that black leather watch, what would you do, kind of thing?
Well, I wouldn't do it. And I would think badly of the person. But there's all kinds of reactions. And one of the reasons I asked that one is, I think it helps you develop empathy in thinking about what it means when we ask a kid not to wear a dress to school. or to put that doll down, or, you know, it's, people think, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing. But you have to get your most cherished object and really think about what it means to you to be told to get rid of it.
Hmm.
So, anyway, that's the exercise. But, you know, you can just write on any of those parts as much as you want or as little as you want. Anyway, so...
So that was Carlene Pendleton Jimenez, just giving a writing prompt. I don't know if anyone did it at home, but I'll just say what the prompts were again. So the first one is you pick an object that you think represents your gender, and you write about it starting with the phrase, my blank object is a part of me. And then you talk about, you know, I think you talk about what it means, like what do you think it represents, and then write a little bit about what would you do if someone tried to take it away from you. So I'll just ad lib what my responses to this would be. I'll just actually say, if you want to call in and share what you're thinking about, please do so at any time, 705-741-4011. I think it'd be really great if someone called in to share what they are thinking in response to these writing prompts. But I'll just share mine. So the object I'm thinking of is my little black and blue purse. So my purse is a part of me. I think it represents my style and my gender in ways that it's understated, and it's very utilitarian. It's I really appreciate how small and subtle but stylish and useful it is, and I think it represents my gender in some ways, because you know, it is a purse, so that is kind of a feminine thing, and I don't identify as a woman, but I still present pretty androgynous on the feminine side, and I think this purse is a nice representation of that, because it is kind of androgynous on the feminine side. It's a purse, so it's kind of feminine, but it's also small and understated, and I don't think it calls a lot of attention to itself, and maybe that speaks to my personality as well. But I mean, that's also something to consider, is like, what's the line between gender and personality. I'm kind of running out of things to say, but if you want to call in and say some things, so I don't have to, 705-741-4011. I also think my purse represents my gender and my personality because, like I said, it's very useful. It's small, but I'm able to fit so much stuff into it. Like, it's probably the size of like my hand span, but I can fit my phone, two notebooks, like three sets of keys. I have like a business card holder. I have my wallet in there. I have like a pen. I think I have two pens and like some hand lotion and some chapstick. And the thing is so tiny. It's like the size of a dictionary. And I really appreciate its usefulness and its utilitarian aspects. And for me, that's what a lot of gender comes down to, is it useful? And for a long time, up until now, and including now, I haven't really found gender that useful a way of identifying or defining myself. So for a long time, I've kind of identified as no gender, just because I didn't think it was that useful. But I'm kind of coming around a bit on it now, and I'm finding gender a bit more of a useful way to identify. Like, for instance, seeing a lot of stuff in the news about, you know, Me Too and misogyny and women's rights, I'm feeling a deeper connection to that, the gender that I was assigned at birth. So I'm kind of coming a bit more around from no gender to some kind of affinity with womanhood, but I don't know if I fully identify as a woman. I don't know, what kind of questions are you having, or what are you thinking about your gender and identity? Would love for some folks to call in, even if you don't think that you should be the one to call in. I promise you, you would be great talking about this. So I will get something good out of you, even if you don't have a lot of confidence in what you're going to say. We'll just make it up as we go and have like a pretty chill conversation. So I would encourage you listening, because you are listening, to call in 705-741-4011. And if you want to work on the writing prompt, I'll just say what the things are again. So first you pick an object that you think represents your gender, and then you write about it starting out with the phrase, "My blank object is a part of me." Then, you know, go from there and write about how you think it represents you, and then write about what would you do if someone tried to take your object away from you. So phone in. We'd love to hear some folks call in. 705-741-4011. And yeah, it'd be great if you could answer some of those questions on the air, or just call in to say whatever you're thinking. I guess I didn't answer the part where what I would do if someone tried to take my purse away from me. I mean, I'd probably, you know, scream, "I'm being robbed! Someone stop that guy!" But if they were taking it away just because they didn't like the way I was expressing my gender, I guess that's something, like, I probably wouldn't let them, but I know in terms of my personality that I'm also very non-confrontational. So realistically, I would probably just listen to what they had to say, be uncomfortable about it, and then go home and consider what they had said, and the next day be very angry because I've decided that I didn't like what they said. I think it would probably primarily just make me really uncomfortable if someone tried to take my purse away and if someone got offended by the way I was presenting myself. Yeah, okay, so no one's calling in, but maybe I can rope Jeff, my helper, into talking a bit about this writing prompt if he's comfortable with it. He's not coming in, so maybe not. Maybe he's trying to tell me something. Oh, he's coming, I think. Hello, Jeff.
Hi. Hello. Hi. Hey, hi. Hi. Hello. Call us. Why didn't you call? No, I think folks at home probably need a bit more time to do some writing.
Yeah, true enough. Did you came in with a paper? You did the actual writing prompt?
I'm a prolific writer, so it's a little easier for me to follow along. Actually, Carlene was my professor when I was taking a Bachelor of Education at Trent University, and it was not uncommon for us to have writing prompts with Carlene. So this was not too much of a stretch for me.
Yeah. I'm gonna just turn your microphone down so you can reposition it.
I don't mind. I don't mind slouching. It's all good.
Okay. what did you write?
Okay, so the object I chose is my pink shirts. I have pink floral shirts that I like to wear sometimes, so I'm gonna write about that. My pink floral shirt is a part of me. The buttons are thick and glossy, and the pattern is flamboyant and fun. I feel like it gives me distance from the distasteful identity I found in my male friends and colleagues, who would never dare to wear anything more girly than a wristwatch. If anyone took away my pink floral shirt, I would hunt for a new one relentlessly at every thrift store in town. I need to feel free to cast off my gender once in a while and remind myself that I need to make an effort to differentiate my identity from theirs, the boys who will be boys.
Interesting.
That's all I got. That's what I got.
What would you do if someone took your pink shirts away from you?
I said that. I said if anyone, I would look for a new one. Okay, yeah, gotcha. I would hunt it down. Yeah, no, it's important to me. I was super pumped. I think going to thrift stores only really became part of my life when I was living on my own in downtown Winnipeg, and there's just so many thrift stores in downtown Winnipeg, and just whenever I was feeling sad, I would kind of like wander around. And see if I could find anything. And I started realizing that like I could dress myself however I wanted for like $10, right? And there's something so empowering about that. And I was like, wait a minute. Like I can just buy like pretty shirts. And that just like changed everything. Like I have like a masculine identity. Like I'm a boy, 100%. I'm a boy. But like I don't want to be a bro. And there's something like very distinct about that. There's something very like dangerous and big and menacing about like a lot of the standard male identity in our culture, and I hated that. And like this for me was a way to just not be that. It's a token gesture, obviously. Like I said, it's something I need to. It's more of a reminder that I need to put an effort in to not be one of those people. And like bless you if you're a bro and also really nice and kind to women. It's not unheard of. You know, if you take the time to reflect on who you are and your impact on the world around you and you try to make a positive difference. I have not seen a lot of that. And that's it scared me to feel that if I was just one of them, it would just be too easy to ignore like my duties as a human being in this world, to just try to make this place better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My pink shirts help me make the world a better place.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
That's no problem. So just a reminder, these prompts are if you want to follow along at home, and if you want to call in or send us a tweet, we're still on Twitter. It's at PTBO_currents. We are following that. Think of an object that represents your gender identity and start off your prompt with my gender affirming object is a part of me. Provide a little description about what it is, how it looks, how it feels, how it helps you be who you are. And then describe what you would do if anyone took it away from you.
And call in to 705-741-4011. And Jeff will take your call.
I'll do that.
Thanks for coming in, Jeff.
Bye.
It's the top of the hour, so I'll just say that you're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. Going to take a quick little music break. I'll just say again, the number to call in is 705-741-4011. What should we listen to? Let's see. I kind of want to pick some sort of queer artist because today on Peterborough Currents, we're talking about being queer in the Kawarthas. It's hard because I am looking at this list of local artists and I don't know for sure how all of them identify, but there are, maybe I can find Evangeline Gentle because I know she's very public about her identity. So we'll just take a little music break so that you can maybe have a chance to write out that prompt. So pick an object that you think represents your gender identity, write a bit about it, and then what you would do if someone tried to take it away from you. And then, hopefully, call in to 705-741-4011 and share that on the radio. You don't need to identify yourself, so if you want to be anonymous, we can totally make that happen. If you prefer online, we've got an email address, peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter and Facebook. But I will give you a chance to catch up on that, and we'll listen to What's Golden is Good by Evangeline Gentle.
Last night I dreamt I was a falling tree, and the hardest part was awaken. A grove of rejoicing limbs tangled in all my sins. This must be some kind of church, but I was the falling one, restless and manic one, weak at the knees for the sky. But in my dreams, I blood desire for the hard love keeps me wicked and knees for the sky. But in my dreams, I'm where water meets land. In my dreams, I'm where fire meets sand. In my dreams, I start to understand why what's golden is good. In angry waves, swallow me with the tide. Fire meets sand. In my dreams, I start to understand why what's golden is good. What's golden is good.
That was What's Golden is Good by Evangeline Gentle. You can find her music at evangelinegentle.bandcamp.com. So this is Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio and podcasted at peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. Sorry, forgot what I was going to say there. My name's Aisha Barmania, and today we're talking about being queer in the Kawarthas. If you'd like to phone in, we're taking calls on the show today. So the number is 705-741-4011. So in my neighborhood, I live in the downtown-ish, and I live in a neighborhood called The Avenues, which is home to a whole bunch of different lovely people. And I think one of its defining characteristics are these lovely brick houses that all look fairly similar. They were all built around the same time. And it's called The Avenues because each avenue is named after a different person who was part of the family that used to own that land. So there's Boswell, Elias, Pearl Avenue. I live on a street called Thomas, and you see all these lovely brick houses, and in front of a lot of them, especially on Pearl Avenue or Pearl Street, you can see so many houses flying these rainbow pride flags. Mostly the rainbow flag, there's also one or two trans flags or bisexual flags on various streets in the avenues. And it's this wonderful sense of community, and it really is quite lovely. So I wanted to ask my neighbors why they put up these flags and how it all kind of got started. It's this kind of lovely thing. So I just went around and talked to folks, and here's a bit of what they had to say.
My name's Dawn Swayze, and I live on Pearl Avenue in Peterborough.
When did you get a pride flag?
Shortly after moving into the neighborhood, actually. My neighbor, Paulo, brought one for my husband and I, and we hang it every year.
What do you think it means that there's so many flags hanging up on this street and in this neighborhood?
Well, I think that we're a liberal neighborhood who believe in supporting our community at large, whatever preferential relationship they or partner that they choose to have. We certainly support their right to be with whomever they'd like to be. And I think we're able to identify as an inclusive neighborhood because of it. The avenues in particular are a very unique neighborhood. We probably know this neighborhood better than we knew the neighborhood we lived in for the last dozen years previously in Niagara. There's a network of communication. We want to address issues together as a group, and I think it lends to us, you know, being more cohesive than any other neighborhood I've ever been a part of. So that's really encouraging that that's going on today. I mean, there's so many reasons for people to be sort of, you know, to stick to their own and to know, you know, go to work and then not be involved in their neighborhood. But we often get together. We have barbecues in the summer and we play hockey, street hockey in the winter, and anybody is welcome. And that's the great thing about this neighborhood. There's a lot of, you know, hate messages and close-mindedness, and I think that combating that is important, and to be visual about it as well. I think the flag represents that we are more open than, you know, someone who is discouraging of, you know, their neighbor's preferences and partners. I think it's absurd. Yeah. If you love somebody, I think that's, you know, whether it's a woman loving a woman or a man loving a man or whatever your preference is, I think love is the basis of that message and it should be celebrated. I don't think it should be shamed. It's not about pride, the reason the flag is hung. It's about being a supportive community member. And that happens all year round. It's not exclusive to this weekend here. But certainly, we're always very mindful of a pride celebration, whether it's in Toronto or London or friends of mine in Niagara. Or, you know, when I hear about it, I feel like I'm a part of it because we are supportive of the gay community. I think that's the message we want to raise our child with, that she should also be that way, so...
My name's Michelle Lewin, and I live on King Street in the Avenues. Well, I'm a single parent of two teen boys, and a couple of years ago, there was the incident in a nightclub in Orlando where there was a shooting that seemed to be motivated as a hate crime. And the kids heard about it and heard through school and through friends, you know, that sort of what do we do when... there were already a few flags up in this neighborhood, and somebody had mentioned that there was going to be an opportunity to sort of put in an order and someone would grab them for us. And the boys were so excited to do that and just to have something is their way of saying it's not okay, right? So it was an opportunity to talk with them about why it's okay or not okay to who you love, and it just seemed like the perfect opportunity. But ironically, it's now become almost like those block parent signs. It used to be in the window when I was a kid, which meant safe house, kind of if you're in trouble or you need a hand or anything like that, this is a place where you could stop and you'd find a sympathetic family, right?
Has anyone done that?
Yeah, in some ways. I've had people actually, while I'm out sitting on the porch or in the garden, comment on the flag. Some older folks and some, you know, teens. Sometimes it's in the middle of another conversation about the cat or something else, and they say, oh, I noticed your flag. And so it's just, it's sort of a, like a well-met kind of symbol, you know? And it makes me feel good that... the kids can see those all the way through our neighborhood. It's part of their fabric. Yeah, it's hugely important to me. I mean, we live in a great community. We have a number of friends who have kids who may identify as opposite gendered when they get a little bit older. And just to know that that's considered common and normal and fine, it's part of... It's only one part, but it is part of what makes the Avenues a really special place to have a family.
My name's Paolo Fortin, and I am the director of Evans Contemporary in Peterborough, Ontario. And I own a house on Pearl Avenue, 302 Pearl Avenue, with my partner, Patricia. We bought it in 2010. It kind of started out as a bit of a joke with my our then roommate who was living at the house. She she moved in with us when we first bought the house and lived in the attic apartment. And we asked her and her partner if they wanted to put a pride flag up when the Toronto Pride World Pride, I think it was World Pride at that year, right. When it was just happening. It was 2013, and we asked them if they were going to put one up. And they, you know, as they said, "Oh, we're world lesbians, and our protest days are behind us." And so instead of putting one flag up, I asked anyone on the street if they wanted to put a flag up that I'd buy the flags, and kind of as a joke to them. So I wrote an email on the Google group, and I had to phrase it carefully because I knew I didn't want to put it out there that, you know, we were trying to like force a flag on anyone, and also, you know, I just wanted to, you know, see if anyone wanted to put one up. And so, you know, I phrased it in the sense that, you know, you could put it up for many different reasons. Maybe it's just to add a little bit of color to the gardens this year, right? You know, you don't have to see it as anything. I really didn't want to kind of, you know, make people feel badly about not taking one. So, you know, I put it out on the Google group network, thinking that, you know, maybe I'd, you know, run down to Toronto and buy three or four flags, and out of 20 houses on the street, 13 of them took flags. So, you know, one of the reasons that it's such a beautiful thing is that it shows not only to support the cause of what the rainbow flag is all about, but, you know, it shows community on the street and support and a safe street, so, which is a place that I want to live. And I think every person should be able to live in a place like that. So, you know, my history has been like, I went to art school, I'm an artist. A lot of my friends are gay, lesbian, part of the community. My parents, you know, when I was really young, we traveled to the East Coast, mainly down to New England in the summers. And one of the places that my mom was going was Cape Cod. And so we would always end up in Provincetown, which in the summer is, it's kind of a mecca for the queer scene. And you know, having known as an artist that Provincetown was always an art center, or it used to be an arts commune, and then it at some point turned into the summer vacation spot for the community. Having gone down there so much, you know, I got to talk to a lot of people down in that community, and I remember one specific individual who told me about his experience, you know, being chased and all, you know, constantly being beaten up and chased and kicked around. He said that when he would run down a street and he saw a place with a pride flag on it, he knew that was a place for him that he could go. That it was almost like this community watch thing, like the block watch, or that you know, there was a safe zone for him to go, and that really resonated with me. And you know, whether for anyone that needs help, you know, to see these flags, they'll know that it's a safe community, that you know, the neighbors know each other, it's a safe street, it's a safe neighborhood, and that it's it's a safe spot to go.
So Paolo Fortin was the one who first put it out there in the Google group, like you said, to buy these first flags. And when me and my partner and my tiny found family moved to the Avenues, we were really feeling very positively and very welcome when we saw all of these pride flags in the neighborhood. I kind of immediately started to say, like, I want to get a flag. I want to get my bisexual flag. I want to get a trans flag. I think we should start flying these things because it feels really safe to identify in this way. And it really felt like being part of the community to have this pride flag up. We also had some other friends of ours move to the neighborhood because they saw these flags and because they saw our flags specifically up there. So I wanted to talk to Drew and Ronnie because they are trans and they live on Pearl Avenue now, and they also found the trans flags and the pride flags to be really supportive.
Hello, I'm Ronnie. I use they/them pronouns, and I'm one of the people staying at our house on Pearl Street.
Yeah. My name is Drew, and I use he, him pronouns.
And you guys have just, like, moved in the last month or so. You're still kind of unpacking things, but you already have your trans pride flag up front. Why was it important to get that up there?
So we had a little, like, mini debate amongst ourselves and our other roommate, who is not here right now, about what flag to put up. But the flag debate was between the classic pride flag and the trans flag, because all of us are trans. We kind of decided that we wanted to do that trans flag. And for us to have the trans flag instead of the pride flag specifically, it was about really showing who we are and being visible. And it's great having the pride flags there, but we wanted to make sure that if someone, you know, happened to be walking down the street or saw that, they saw that visibility of, like, there's, like, a trans flag here. We know what this is. And I guess I suppose the same thing is if someone was needing help or saw something, that we wouldn't stand for that happening in this area. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely an inclination to go to the rainbow flag. I think oftentimes, especially, and I can't make assumptions about who's flying the flags or not, but when allies are trying to show support, they tend to choose the rainbow flag because they're more familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And they might not be more familiar with the rest of the community. They're kind of like, this means, like, gay or lesbian, and I'm cool with that, so I'm going to show that I am. Which is one of the reasons why I think having this flag hopefully will bring conversation and maybe make those folks, if they aren't already, more attuned with things that are going on and maybe open up like their minds in terms of, like, oh, I am an ally, but I also need to learn more. Being an ally means that I'm constantly growing too. And so being able to kind of, like, learn more about the community and who they're kind of trying to represent when they have that flag, because it means so much more than just gay, lesbian, because it doesn't represent bisexuals as well, and pansexuals, and two-spirit folks, and non-binary individuals, and, like, a whole gamut of other identities that fall within that.
Do you ever worry that being the only trans flag on the block might be some sort of target? Like, it does identify the house as, you know, trans folk maybe live here. Is that a concern at all?
I mean, it's not a concern in that doing it made me want to stop doing it, but it is something that I thought about. But also, I feel like, for me, I'm fairly visible in the community. People know me generally as a trans person. I work within the trans community. I volunteer within it and the LGBT community. So I figured if something was going to happen, it probably happened to me anyways. Okay. So for myself, I just wanted to make sure that was there. And I hope that other people will then maybe feel comfortable doing that. And if something does happen, then we'll deal with it when it does. But it was definitely a thought that I had myself, is that having this flag here means that maybe someone will, you know, do something violent, or maybe they'll just, like, say something bad, or, you know, throw an egg or something. But I think it's worthwhile to be able to not hide or be fearful about that, and kind of just be like, no, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere, and if you're gonna egg my house, I guess I'll just clean it.
Maybe my neighbors will help me.
Yeah, which would be really good. I hope that they would. And I think that, again, by them having, you know, having such positivity and the flags out and really wanting to be a part of that and showcase their appreciation, and also, like, their allies, that they would do that. And I think that this community has a sense of that, like, kind of like real connection.
That was a work in progress documentary that I'm working on for Peterborough Currents. It'll be in the podcast and up on our website later this week. You can subscribe to the podcast. We've got instructions on how to do all that on our website, peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. And we'll post links to all of the documentaries if you want to share or anything to our Twitter, ptbo_currents, and on our Facebook. But the best way to get all of our stuff is to subscribe to the podcast and to tune in every Sunday, 10 to 11:30 on Trent Radio. So time's about winding down, but if anyone did want to call, we still have a bit of time. It's 705-741-4011. What do you think of neighborhoods and neighbors putting up rainbow flags? Would you put up a rainbow flag? What would it mean to you? Are you queer? What does it mean when you see rainbow flags up everywhere? Call in 705-741-4011. One of the things about the pride flags in the avenues is that, as Paolo Fortin was saying, there used to not really be a place in Peterborough where you could buy them. So it started out as this project of convenience kind of thing, where Paolo was going to Toronto to buy flags, and he just wanted to see if anyone else wanted to get in on that. We now have a shop in downtown Peterborough that's a queer-friendly sex shop. So they sell, you know, all, it's an adult boutique, I believe is what they're calling it. But it also, they also sell gender affirming gear and all these, they're having workshops and things like that. They're called You're Welcome. And I sat down with one of the co-owners to talk a bit about what they're doing there. So here's some of that interview.
Hi, I'm Diana Stevens. I'm the owner of the new adult boutique downtown called You're Welcome.
Tell me a bit about what makes You're Welcome special.
We're unique in that we're brand new. We're right downtown Peterborough. We're also an inclusive adult store, so absolutely everyone is welcome, and we've got products to reflect a wide variety of interests and activities.
What's the stereotype of adult boutiques out there, and why is it important to be inclusive?
So a huge variety of adult boutiques cater specifically to a cisgender heterosexual couple, and they often have toys that are not awesome quality or not made of awesome materials. So we wanted to be a lot more inclusive because pretty much everyone's having sex, or if they're not having sex with others, they might be having sex with themselves, or they might be looking for things that are gender affirming or body positive, that kind of thing. So we really wanted to be inclusive because that's what we were looking for. So my co-owner is my wife, and when we moved back to Peterborough a couple of years ago, there was no stores that really reflected what we were interested in shopping or buying. And we had such great experiences in Toronto at Good For Her and Come As You Are. We wanted to bring that experience back to Peterborough.
Could you talk a bit more about why this is so close to your heart?
Sure. So my wife and I are definitely part of the gay community. And a lot of folks we know are trans, and talking to them about experiences that they've had in other stores locally and that and their lived experiences, we wanted to create a space where we could support folks on their gender journey, really. There's not a lot of places in Central Ontario to buy binders and packers and other gender-affirming garments, so we really wanted to make sure that we were supporting the folks we love in making actionable change.
Can you talk a bit about, before you started your own business, what was it like as a queer woman going to adult boutiques, and what was it like when you found an inclusive one?
So a lot of times when you go into a sex shop, there's pornography that's super like cishet. There's a lot of packaging that just has a lot of like really aggressive penises and a lot of things that are incredibly gendered. So and everybody has a body, but not everybody's going to be interested in the same type of activity. So when we were choosing products and when we were shopping for our store, we wanted to be different. But prior to that, shopping just as a consumer, buying things that say for him and her, like that just wasn't for me. It felt super limiting. And I love online shopping. Like I would just buy online. But again, when you purchase online, you don't get to see it or feel it or see if it's going to do the thing that you want it to do. So it was very limiting. It was very frustrating.
And what was your first experience like going into an inclusive boutique?
Oh, it's so different. So we lived in Toronto for a long time, and we definitely frequented Come As You Are quite regularly. And the atmosphere in there was so lovely. It was bright and inviting and not intimidating. No one was hitting on you. There was no packaging that you were really unsure of. You could ask questions, try the stuff. And there was just a variety of things that were unique that I'd never seen before. So it was just a totally different experience. Totally sex positive, totally body positive, affirming. It was just really wonderful. And it was very life changing.
I also feel like it comes from this total difference in attitude towards sex, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like going into a more traditional sex shop or adult boutique, like something you should be ashamed of.
Absolutely.
But the feeling in your shop and at Come As You Are is much more friendly. And
absolutely. Well, shame is such a horrible feeling. Folks shouldn't be ashamed of what they want. When you can identify what your desire is and, you know, you're an autonomous consenting adult, you should do whatever you want. People's sex lives and their desires and their fantasies, I don't think there's really a place for judgment there. So when you reduce the stigma, you reduce the judgment, and you try and be as sex positive as you possibly can, folks are having better, safer sex.
Do you think there's almost like a radical ideology there that's like this radical change from more traditional sexuality?
I think there probably is, because when you can talk about things and you can find folks who feel similarly about things, similar to the way you feel, you're likely going to create a stronger community of people who are making better choices and having better experiences and safer experiences.
What do you think having an inclusive adult boutique that's queer friendly, how do you think this can contribute to education and learning about sexuality in a positive way?
Having a storefront is really great because lots of folks who are coming in to buy, you know, standard sex toys, they're able to learn a lot more and become a lot more aware of other things just because of the things we have on the shelf. So we have a lot of folks who come in shopping for condoms or lube or vibrators or whatever, and they see some of the other things we have. And I guess because we're friendly or we're not intimidating or we somehow look like we know stuff, folks ask us lots of questions. And so we've been really blessed. We feel like we're fairly well educated, but we're always learning. But we've also got a lot of great support systems within the community who we can get people in touch with. We've been really supported by Gender Journeys and CASAC, the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center, to make sure that we can put people in touch with people who really are the experts in lots of different things.
Very cool. And You're also doing workshops and educational sessions like that. What did those focus on?
Literally anything. So on Wednesdays and Saturdays, we're running classes and workshops and seminars on anything to do with sex or gender or bodies or living your life as a queer person or living your life with a disability or living your life with just about anything. We've left the door really open so that community members who are an expert in whatever it is they want to teach people about can approach us with a proposal. And if it's in line with what we do and with what we're looking for, then they'll teach it. So the month of October, we've got a local sex therapist, I think she's an intimacy coach, teaching some blowjob classes. She's going to be talking about ethical porn consumption. We've got another person who's going to be writing love letters, like a DIY love letter writing seminar. We've also got a doula who's going to be talking about hormones and alternative birth control. Last month, we did a couple of classes on consent and boundaries and identifying desires, and that was really successful for us.
The shop has been open for a couple of months now. What's the response been?
Amazingly positive. We were really not quite sure how it was going to go because we are we're an adult boutique right downtown in the heart of Peterborough. But the response has been overwhelmingly positive. We've had no negative experiences. Folks, even if they're not shopping with us, they pop their head in and say, hi, welcome to the neighborhood. We've had a couple of folks stop us when we're out of the store and just thank us for opening, which is just like an incredible experience. It makes us feel like we're doing something good, like we're doing something right. And that's really wonderful.
That was an interview with Diana from You're Welcome. You can find them in downtown Peterborough on George Street. They are a brand new adult boutique that is queer friendly. And as Diana was saying, they've got a bunch of workshops coming up. So check them out on their website and on social media. You're welcome, PTBO. That's it for Peterborough Currents today. This is our last episode for the month talking about being queer in the Kawarthas. Next month, our theme is democracy. If you have any topics you'd like to get involved with, I also need to thank Valentina. Thank you, Valentina, so much for editing that interview with You're Welcome. You did a really, really great job. Thanks for all your work on that. Next month is democracy, and the podcast will be out I'm probably going to do two parts so that I can get some stuff out about the municipal election so that folks can listen to that and help that have that to inform their voting choices. And then we'll do a second part for stuff that's going to take a bit longer to make and isn't as focused on the election. If you'd like to get involved with Peterborough Currents, we have some volunteer opportunities. Valentina was our amazing volunteer who helped with this month's theme. So if you'd like to get involved, we can help you make your own radio stories, give you some podcasting skills, that sort of stuff. You can just get in touch by email, peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com. If you like the segments on today's show, they'll be on our website later this week, peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. And also at that website, you can find a guide on how to subscribe to our podcast. You can also just find us by searching Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. All those apps should have our podcast there, Peterborough Currents. Many thanks to John Whalen for the music used in today's show. You can find his music at John Whalen, that's johnwhelan.bandcamp.com. Beautiful piano music. Thank you very much, John. Thanks very much to Jeff for manning the phones. You got to call in so that Jeff has something to do, so I have something to thank him for. But anyways, thanks, Jeff, for coming on the show and talking a bit about your writing prompt and things like that. If folks did write something when we played the clip from Professor Carlene Pendleton Jimenez, would love to see that. If you want to post a photo or email us, you can find all of our links at Peterborough Currents. Thanks to Valentina for volunteering on the show today. It was really great to have you, and I'm looking forward to getting you to do more stuff for us if you're up for it. Who else do I need to thank? Thanks to Trent Radio for the broadcast facilities. Thanks to Peterborough Independent Podcasters for hosting our podcast. And shout out to my podcast co-host, Will. And that's it. Thanks for listening. I'm Aisha Barmania. Talk to you next week.